Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Been left to Chris Wyatt, and how well he did that again. Scott Quinnell, a bust by Scott Gibbs. Scott Gibbs is through. Scott Gibbs has scored. What an amazing.
Carlos Spencer.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. A man calling himself Carlos, the Carlos Spencer of podcasting. Daniel Killick is with me. How are you, Dan?
Yeah, good. What a great player Carlos Spencer was as well.
Oh, mate, what a joy to watch that man was.
Murphy's choked on his brandy there.
A massive fan, but they still pick Andrew Mertens the whole time.
Yeah, steady. Yeah. You're the Andrew Mertens, I think, for tonight. And I'm going in the Carlos Spencer role.
I'll have all the captain money. You can have, you can have the acclaim 20 years later. You're welcome.
Yeah, some incredible kicks, missed passes. The real magician.
Well, let's hope you live. Hope you live up to either of those billings. God knows what that makes me. I dread to think what kind of truly awful 10 I would have been. Hopefully, I can do a better job at steering this ship. It is the final podcast before the Lions squad is announced, and we will of course be getting into the final call, seeing if we can predict what Warren Gatland is going to do when it comes to Thursday. We're also going to have a look and see who we think the biggest casualty might be. So who the most high-profile player to miss out. And there are going to be some high-profile players missing out of that, we can be pretty much sure. We'll be reacting at the news that Ben Youngs has ruled himself out of contention. We'll also have a look back at the Heineken Cup semi-finals. And we've got some listeners' questions to get stuck into as well. Right, where do you want to begin, chat? Should we start with Ben Youngs? This is a slightly, I suppose a slightly surprising one, because I think most of us very much expected him to be on the plane, didn't we?
We didn't pick him.
We didn't pick him, but I think in terms of what we were expecting Gatland to do, I think most of us said that he was more than likely going to feature in that squad.
Well, he went in 2013. And he pulled out in 2017.
He did.
And probably would have been picked in 2017. But I don't know what Gatland, obviously we don't know what Gatland would have done now. We never will, because he's made it easy for him. But in reality, like we said when we picked our side, he made it more complicated, the fact that the disruption of the Welsh Nines.
Yeah.
We used four different lines, and they all at one stage or another were injured. And if anyone had settled in and had a clear run of decent games, would have pushed Ben Youngs further down the pecking order, kind of thing. But he would never have made my tour.
No, he wouldn't have made mine as well. And I don't know. It's hard to know whether he got a bit of a tip off. But I understand he was one of the 50 players who were. Who were contacted to say that they were in consideration, and whether we got a tip off or actually whether you just don't know. It's a very hard thing to kind of put yourself in someone else's shoes, isn't it? Because he might have had a tough season. He's potentially maybe he's not in the right mindset or whatever. And I think particularly if you're going into a very tough biosecure bubble type scenario, it's going to be very, very difficult for you at the best of times. So I don't know, mate, again, I'm just playing complete devil's advocate here, but
I would have taken him, boys.
Would you?
Yeah, I would have taken him. Yeah, just think on experience and the fact that none of the nines have really, you know, have really sort of, there's not a standout nine then, is there? And we need, I just think experience on this tour will, you know, will really pay off. And he's been there, he's done it, hasn't he? He's got a huge amount of caps. I know he's not popular. He's not popular in England even, is he? Really? which is really interesting and fascinating. But he's for me on this, with the way the nines have gone, would have taken him. So I'm not disappointed, but he would have got on my plane then.
See, if you're the same way, Dan, there must be lots of people who agree with you. Because, you know, I mean, he's got nearly 100 caps, and because he plays by an English pack, he's always finds himself in a lot of space and all that stuff. But a lot of people, like you, would have had him in their squad. But what do people think now that he's written off, not going to be considered? Who do they think is taking up the gap that he would have been in? Because we did Conor Murray, Gareth Davies, Thomas Watkin, which is, you know, completely fair-minded.
Thomas Watkin, was it?
Thomas
Williams. Early one tonight.
Yeah, this pandering I got on the door. And the fact that early onset dementia. Where does everyone think it's going to go now? Because if people are saying he was going to be on the tour, a lot of people are. You know.
Yeah.
Where do people think it's going now? Because we struggled to work out. We didn't. We're enough. Me and Jed are not particular fans of Ben Young, so we won in our squad, but we still struggle to fill out the three.
Yeah, we did. Because
of the form across the nations of outside scrum half.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I completely get Dan's argument. I just think that for, you know, Murray does the experienced, get what you say on the tin, nine, you know, obviously he's the starting nine in all three tests last time round. I think he went on the 13 tour as well. So you've got bucket loads of Lions experience too. So that's what I think you've got there. And then it's a question of Gareth Davies bringing big game experience and Thomas Williams being your one who you're banking to reach another level that he's not done at international yet. So I still wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. And that is probably the three that I think Gatland will take.
But my argument, I was thinking of someone about yesterday, actually, that my argument is that for people outside Wales who don't necessarily pay much attention to the depth and quality of our nines, who do they think now? Because I think across the board, most people think Conor Murray's going to be the test nine.
Well, judging by an ill-advised dip into Twitter I did at some point today, I think everyone north of the border thinks Ali / Tommy Price. I think everyone in Ireland thinks they should take three Irish nines. Everyone in England thinks that it should be Spencer and Robson and other options. I don't know. I'm being a bit facetious, but there is a tendency to get very, very parochial when it comes to the Lions. And that's why they have head coaches do it rather than fans, because, you know, we've all got our favourites, and that's the thing. But
you can't objectively, you know, at some point, if you're an English rugby supporter, you can't start dredging up nines who even Eddie Jones doesn't like.
Well, exactly.
And they're going to go on the Lions tour. Yeah. You know, obviously, if you've got club loyalties, like I don't mind Spencer at Bath.
No, I'm surprised he doesn't have more caps. And again, the Eddie Jones thing, we've covered this before, but it makes it so much more difficult for Gatland, because Eddie hasn't capped half the players who you would expect to. You know, he just does not trust anyone other than Ben Youngs at nine. He doesn't trust any of those options.
But if he does trust someone, it's got to be like, they've got to be 33 and no future, like Willie Hines.
Well, exactly. But I mean, that tells you everything, doesn't it? That, you know, that Willie Hines was drafted into that, that World Cup squad. And that was really, really odd. I think that...
The thing is, it tells us everything about Eddie, though, doesn't it? But I don't know. It doesn't tell us much about English nine play.
No, it doesn't, mate. But it also tells you that it makes it more difficult for Gatland, because, as we've said before, you need to know the form of players at the highest level. And if you've only got a handful of caps...
which means he's got to go for Gareth Davies and Thomas Williams, Thomas Watkins, if you like, Thomas Williams. Because
is anyone else talking about Thomas Williams?
I think people outside of Wales will know, because he's there. You know, he's got a good YouTube highlights reel, and you know, he's a flashy, catch the eye kind of player. I think people would be quite excited by him as a nine, especially considering that there's not a huge amount of options, or certainly no clear cut options.
Well, even within Wales, some people would prefer Keenan Hardy.
Yeah, they would.
You know, so it's so contentious. I honestly don't know. I know we've been talking about, you know, biggest upsets and or suggesting we're going to talk about biggest omissions and what have you. It could be a really shocking inclusion. I'll tell you, a player I'm a massive fan of is John Cooney.
Yeah.
I had a message from Craig, who's a good friend of the pod, been on a number of times. He messaged me after we released our squad, and he put Cooney in at nine. I thought, God, we didn't even mention Cooney. And he is. He's an excellent
That's a good
player.
Shout.
But he, good shout, he's out the favourite at international level, so you couldn't read his form. And then I felt sorry for Ulster on Friday night, because he was running the show for them and they were in front, and he got knocked out in a incident that was deemed accidental, and they couldn't string anything together after that, and they just lost to Leicester. It was a big turning point in the game. So
if Price doesn't go, though, he's it's going to be a club, a player that's mainly playing club rugby, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, really? I think Thomas would have played more. You know, he's probably got 20 caps now, hasn't he, Thomas? I think, but he's, you know, he would have played a lot more international rugby had it not been for getting injured at odd times. And obviously, Gatland knows him as well. You know, he's spent the time with him during the World Cup and knows what he's capable of. Whereas, again, Cooney hasn't had that chance to do it at international level.
With Bigger going as well. And really, I don't know, is he the starting 10 at the moment? You know, if we were to do it now, I would say yes.
I think so.
And so maybe that'll come into it. You know, if there is two Welsh knights. I do think, Murph, I think you mentioned it there, that there could be a bit of an upset at nine. I wonder whether Danny Kerr, I don't think you boys could see
again,
that.
Again, I think the only people who think Danny Kerr should be inside, and again, I'm a bit of Dan, we must have covered this before. I love Danny Kerr. And again, I think he should have had way more caps and way more like a run in that England side, because of what he offers, completely different. But the only people realistically who think Danny Kerr should go are BT Sport pundits, because they're commentating on the Premiership, and Harlequins fans. You can't pick Danny Kerr, can you? He's 34, having again been discarded by England, and I just think it's, like, I'm not sure it's viable.
Like over 2 years ago, since England discarded him.
Yeah,
obviously too soon, but that doesn't mean he should then, you know. Harlequins have played much better, which has enabled him to play much better. Therefore, he's got to be on the Lions tour. I mean, it's a bit of a leap, isn't it?
If he was, you know, if they'd got into the Heineken Cup final and he was at the heart of it, I could see it. I could see you going, right, okay, that is such a solid piece of form that you can take that into going on the Lions. But I don't know.
It depends. If Gatland was picking Ben Youngs, And that would have come down to experience. Then he looks at a like for like, out and out experience. I could see, you know, he's your obvious man. But otherwise, he's going to go with someone that's not a bolt. Well, that's got far less experience. Then
look, you know, Gareth Davies. Are we saying he's second? So it would be Conor Murray, Gareth Davies plus one. Is that what we're saying?
I would say so.
Well, Gareth Davies is not inexperienced by any shot.
Is he definitely going, boys, on most people's
if he's not going, it gets even harder to work out who the nines are.
Dan,
you nailed down one then, and we're trying to find the other two.
Dan's got in my head now with this Danny Kerr thing. I've got to think I'm going to look really stupid come Thursday. Well, I am going to look really stupid come Thursday anyway. But
impossible not to.
The nine one is, I mean, it is really fascinating, though, isn't it? Because... yeah, what are we on? We're up for about the 21st minute now of going through nines, and we could probably go on forever. It's It's really interesting. So
I tell you, like, the thought's just gone through my head is like, what if Ben Youngs has had a tip off that Danny Kerr's in the side, and he wants to get his retaliation in first and rule himself out.
Well, I think saying about tip offs, the only people who really know anything in advance is the captain. The captain knows if he's the captain already, and he has to keep his mouth shut.
Shall we move on to this?
Oh, lovely.
No, I'm just saying because no one else, like, I don't think Ben could have a tip off, you know, about Danny or anything like that. Only the captain gets the nod because he's got to be prepared for the PR and all the, you know, the conference and all that stuff.
I think you're right.
Link play from Andrew Mertens there.
I'm just going to keep it simple. I'm not going to do nothing flash. Keep it simple, and the Blacks will love it.
I'm on the inside ball here, like Tanner Among Us, storming through a gap here. It is at the moment. It does lead us on to captain. We had a good question in from Jamie Phillips, who's a regular listener. It said, Who's the right choice for the Lions captain, and why is it Alan Wynne-Jones? Which
correct.
Yeah.
I mean, correct question.
Are we expecting any surprises here, or is Alan Wynne-Jones going to be the skipper?
It's only two horse race anyway, so
it is.
I think whoever they picked would do a good job, but the only thing counting against, there's lots of things counting for Alan Wynne, obviously. There's the only thing that counts against Marrow is he doesn't even captain his club.
No.
I don't think he even does it when Owen Farrell's not there. I can't recollect him captaining Saracens. He hasn't captained his country. And you're going to put him in as a Lions captain. Like I say, if I picked him, I don't think he'd do a bad job at all. But when you've got Alan Wynne available, he's such a, you know, it's not just for us now, it's Northern Hemisphere rugby, in a way. He's become such a towering figure across second row play and, you know, rugby in general, that I was, as you do when you're in lockdown, I was emptying out my TiVo of all things I hadn't watched or I'd watched and deleted. And I was watching the third place playoff from the World Cup.
Oh my God, I've no desire to relive that. Yeah.
This is Wales, New Zealand. They didn't spank us, but they comfortably beat us. And after the game, they're waiting for their bloody ceremony and all stuff. And every single second row from the New Zealand squad made a point of chatting to Alan Wynne for ages. Really? And Steve Hansen and whoever else was senior, all chatting to him for ages. It was a bit off because they didn't speak to anyone else. Yeah. they didn't seek out any of the Welsh players other than Alan Wynne, because he is that sort of a figure now in global rugby, you know. In rugby globally, shall I say.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, if you add that and the fact that he's in great form from the Six Nations, I haven't checked the prices. Normally, just before they make the announcement, the price tumbles and he goes to like 3-1 on or something. But we'll see.
Yeah, it is looking increasingly like that's going to be the case, I think. Dan, any thoughts that it could be Itoju or anyone else, or is Alan Wynne nailed on?
Yeah, nailed on one horse for me. And I think certainly before the Six Nations, there were, you know, there was a few question marks, wasn't there, about, you know, his form, how he was going to fare up in the Six Nations, and he answered any critics, didn't he, so well. He was absolutely majestic. And I'm sitting here now thinking, if, you know, I suppose when Alan Wynne-Jones is announced as captain, you just can't see anybody questioning it, really. Anyone that's balanced with their views would be like, yeah, that's the guy that we want to lead us. I think, you know, from players as well, I just think he's got such, like, he's held in such high regard. And any time there's any little bits of doubt, which, you know, there has been from Welsh media as well, isn't there? He's just literally shut the door on that and almost got better. So, you know, it's going to be a hell of a moment as well, isn't it? And what a sight seeing, you know, hopefully if he is announced, seeing him lead out the team, it'll be quite something.
Yeah, I agree with all that. You'd be hard pressed to be a rugby fan and think, oh, Alan Wynne-Jones isn't going to do a good job of this. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah, he is that talismanic figure. I think he takes it all in his stride as well. that he, because often I think you find as well, you know, it can be, it's hostile when you go on a Lions tour, and you need someone who's able to deal with that. And, you know, I agree with Murphy. And obviously I thought Itoje would have done a brilliant job. As you know, I put a few quid on him earlier on in the year, because I thought that perhaps Alan Wynn might be struggling to make the test team. But you do have to be prepared for, you know, for hostile local media and all that kind of stuff, particularly in New Zealand, but also, yeah, but also in any of those tours. And I think that obviously the experience he's got, I think he just diffuses all that. And Warburton's the same, you know, like you either want a really spiky captain like Martin Johnson, who just doesn't give a shit and will completely flat bat it all, or you want someone like Warburton and Alan Wynn, who tends to, but you'd be, you know, any journo would be too scared to get up in Alan Wynn Jones's face. And he's, you know, he's notoriously very, what's the word? He can be hostile to journos if he doesn't like the question and doesn't say any nonsense. But likewise, I think in recent years, if you look at the World Cup and stuff, people would just warm to him. He'd be a very hard man for any journalist to try and get under the skin of. So, yeah,
they,
I think
he's the right normally, thing. They normally don't do it to his face anyway. It's just him. Normally, yeah. Like the last time round was Warren Gatland dressed as a clown on the pages of the paper. They don't actually say much to their faces. But one thing that comes to mind is he possibly, although there might have been one a long time ago, but possibly the oldest captain. The oldest Lions captain. There won't be men past 35, I wouldn't have thought.
Good shout that, yeah.
I think obviously Willie John probably did it well into his 30s, I'd imagine. But
Willie John did it in his 50s, didn't he?
On one leg.
Yeah, he nearly snuck on the 2005 tour when Woodward was in charge, I think. Yeah.
The other thing with this tour as well, with captain, is because of COVID as well, it is going to be really difficult or challenging. You know, it's a long time, isn't it, that they're going to be cooped up. And, you know, if we do look at, say, Itoje then Alan Wynn, I think just that life experience as well, and the balance that he has is a massive point. I haven't seen too much on that, but the COVID side of this is fascinating. And when you look at selection as well, we could see a whole host of people ruling themselves out and, you know, chopping and shaking. I don't know.
It's really difficult. And it's a really good point that, Dan, because this time round, you know, it's always difficult to manage the camp on a tour as well, because, you know, think back to 2001, you had Austin Healey and Matt Dawson writing columns and upsetting people. You know, 2005 was a notoriously unhappy camp because so many people felt they were just there to carry tackle bags. And keeping that, you know, that that morale up is big. But you're right, in a COVID scenario, you know, you're managing people's, it's even an even tougher job to manage people's mental health when they're in that environment and you're that far away from home. And also, you know, what happens if there's a breach of protocol and managing that and things, you know, and all these things might come up. And I just think, again, his experience and, you know, think back to World Cup in 2019, that Rob Howley stuff that broke just on the, you know, virtually on the eve of the tournament. It didn't faze Wales at all in the slightest.
I'm still evil over that, you know. I know it's 2 years ago. I'm still. Yeah. They sat on that. They sat on that story for months and then released it right on top of the World Cup for maximum effect. So, yeah. Wankers.
Well, I'd agree with that. And that seems like a perfect point for Murph to go and pour himself another Pendarian. And we're going to take a very quick break. You can always rely on Murph to give us a nice bombshell to head into the break with.
We're going to bring exclamation mark for the boys.
Is there anyone playing Murph Bingo right now? I think he's. I don't know what we're sweating on there, but we've got all the greatest hits are out there.
You got him in early. I mean, I think Thomas Watkin in the first 10 minutes. So.
it's gonna stick now. It's like They're definitely nicknames that are going to stay with them. Right, let's take this one, because we were talking about, you know, the way players are perceived. And this is a really interesting tweet we had from Ben House, basically saying, why is it that it only seems to be people in Wales who rate Navidi? He says, heard numbers of podcasts and articles written, and no one seems to be mentioning Josh Navidi as, you know, as even a banker for the squad, yet alone
really
placing the test. Yeah.
So I mean, I was having a meeting online meeting with some of the grandees, if you like, of my rugby club, and Lions came up, and they all seemed to think Tadhg Burn, which, you know, on form, don't, you know, I'm not going to scoff at the idea, but I wouldn't. I'd go Josh. Maybe this is just like a Josh fanboy podcast. I don't know.
Well, starting.
Well, the line, people are picking the test side. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. And the same as you.
Jed's making the point that no one else apart from us seems to think Josh is nailed on.
Yeah, well, this is it. And from what Ben's saying, it seems to be that actually, you know, he's not really been spoken about in the
squad.
In the squad. So I think he said that the
that is bollocks.
Well, yeah, it is. The Ruck apparently chose a 36-man team, and Navidi wasn't even mentioned, which I just find it astonishing, because, like, it's and look, firstly, you're right, this is a Josh Navidi fanboy podcast, but yeah. For a reason.
Let's just change the name.
I know, yeah. We should just call it that.
Navs, what should we call it? That's his nickname, that'll do, just Navs.
But anyone who's watched him at, you know, any degree of you know, with any degree of detail in any test match, it's just like, yeah, this guy has something completely different. I've said it before, it's just unreal strength, because he doesn't look like he should be as strong as he is.
No,
you know, and he, regardless of whatever his, you know, whatever his stats and weight and stuff, it's just whenever he goes into a collision, it looks as though he will get the better of it. And we've said it before, you know, anyone who can wrap up Billy Vunipola has got something about them. And South Africa are going to be strong on massive bastards in the back row or in the second row. So it's like you need that kind of strength, that proper, that wrestler strength. And all the other bits he does to his game as well. He's just a complete animal to me.
Yeah.
Well, he's almost first name on the team sheet, isn't he? Really, and because we know.
Oh, we've lost Killick now, have we?
Have I gone? Have I? Am I back?
You're back now.
Back. Yeah, because am I back now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just saying it. I wonder if he's not talked about, even being in the squad in a lot of parts of England and Scotland and Ireland, and, well, it can't be Wales, but over there, that he does, he's unflashy, isn't he? But you don't have to watch the games for long to see how much he's involved in them. He just gets through so much work. The stats show it all, don't they, really? But it's also I think within Wales, everyone knows that when Wales play without him, we're not the same side.
No.
And it's the same for club as well. Like we're a very, very different outfit without him. And the way in which he makes the back row function is quite something. And it possibly, you know, it took a lot of people by surprise within Wales, didn't it, when he came onto the scene as an international. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that's something to do with it in the wider, you know, the wider rugby view maybe. But I mean, for me, yeah, he's the six, out and out six. And Tadhg Burn, I'd have on the bench.
Well, Dan, even if you could make an argument that someone else should be six, he's a very strong contender for seven.
Hmm.
You know, like, yeah. If you're trying to knock back the South African side, you know, with all sorts of massive runners coming at you, well, you could go for a big six, and then if you wanted, an extremely powerful seven in Josh Navidi. So
that's a good shout. Yeah.
So I honestly can't.
But he's somewhere
in that
back row.
If he doesn't go, I might just genuinely take up my fandom of cycling properly.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any need to worry about that just yet. Because if there is one man who knows how good Josh Navidi is, it's Warren Gatland. And, you know, we've said this before, and a lot of column inches and nonsense on Twitter since we've taken that with Hamish Watson, who I'm a big fan of. I think we picked him in our side. You know, I think he's a real, like, cannonball of a player. I like him a lot. But if it was a straight shootout and Gatland was only going to take one of them, he's taking Navidi.
Yeah.
He is. Yeah. And you know, I I think there's room for both in the squad, as we said. But if there wasn't, I just can't see Gatland not taking Davide.
Well, I think you're right about the colloquial nature or parochial nature of it is that people, when they look at Hamish Watson or Josh Navidi, they're counting all their own favourite players from their own country first and then working out which one can't make it in.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do, exactly.
Yeah.
And yeah. Well,
going back to South Africa, I think last week I was saying that they haven't played much rugby. Well, they haven't played an international. I hadn't clicked that they have been playing domestic rugby. They've played Currie Cup and all sorts, haven't they?
That's true, yeah.
I completely off the ball there. I mean, in fairness, it doesn't get much coverage. And also, another thing, because with them not playing international rugby, you don't get to hear so much, is Peter Steph Dutoit's been out for ages with a broken leg. He came back last week. It's all... And the other thing is, most of it, I was saying about the number of people that might... of their squad, they might get selected from up here, Northern Hemisphere. Most of their squad is Northern Hemisphere.
There's
countless in the top 14, and the rest are spread out across this. Well, there's quite a few in the Munster side, the big names, and tons. I mean, tons of like second string guys in the Gallagher Premiership at Sale and what have you. So, I don't think there's an issue with game time. It's just actually together as a squad time.
That's
they've got quite a few injuries then, haven't they?
Oh yeah, shed loads. Yeah, loads. Yeah.
I do think it's the not playing together as a team though. That's the bit, because obviously normally the hosts have that advantage of the Lions being a scratch side and not having played together. Whereas actually, if you haven't played together for over 18 months, and again, they're all quality players. They're all playing very, very good rugby. But it does make it that much more difficult if you've not been able to get that game time together. And I think that is what's going to separate it from a normal tour. And these are things that will probably play into the Lions' hands. And depending on what the situation is with fans in the stadium, I know it's slightly different with the Lions because there's always such good travelling support. Yeah. But it does make for a different game when it's played behind closed doors, as we've said. So
I
think any element of home advantage would be eroded if there aren't any supporters. But
it's true, yeah. I think Andre Pollard made his comeback on the weekend as well, didn't he? Off the bench. And that's good news for them, obviously, because I think he's...
It was the missing piece of the jigsaw for a long period of time. I think they turned around their fortunes ahead of the Rugby World Cup really, really well. If you look back, you know, you look about 18 months before that, the impact that Razia Rasmus had coming in was absolutely massive. But I think Pollard in particular was really, really key to them because they hadn't had someone nailed down that 10 jersey for quite some time, someone to be, you know, a real dependable match-winning 10. And I think he fits that bill, doesn't he? He's every inch a South African Springbok 10.
He had a great World Cup. So,
quality player.
He is. Right, let's have a look at let's take a look at what we were saying right at the top of the show. There are obviously going to be some casualties. Dan, over to you first. Who is going to be the most high profile player to miss out on Thursday? Again, this is not what you do, but what you think Gatland is going to do.
It'd be quite good to look at a high profile person from each country, really, wouldn't it? Because it's high profile to that country, but maybe not to, you know, maybe not to others. I mean, for me, I do think Hamish Watson is going to miss out. I just think the back with that back row, and it'll cause uproar, won't it? But I have a feeling he won't be making the plane.
Hmm. Murph, do you think he's going to go?
Yeah, I can't see it. I mean, Sam Underhill had a big game on the weekend, Bath in the semi-finals of the Challenge Cup, got taken off after 50 minutes.
Mm.
He wasn't terrible, but he didn't do much. You know, he was okay, got taken off. So, you know, the kind of people who are suggesting Hamish won't go, they're either huge Justin Tipperick fans or Navidi fans, or they're Sam Underhill fans.
Yeah.
And Sam Underhill didn't do much, so... You know, that narrows it down. Whether his reputation from the World Cup means he goes anyway, Sam Underhill, I don't know. But he's not in, you know, he wasn't in good form in the Six Nations and he's still not in good form now because, you know, they left...
he didn't play Six Nations, did he?
Zach Mercer on the pitch and they brought on that young kid, who I forget the name of, instead early, you know, early on in the game. So he's not, you know, he's not at his best. So I wouldn't take Underhill over Hamish Watson, personally, but then obviously I'm not English.
But, if it was Tipperick? Tipperick or Watson?
Well, like we said at the time, that comes down to the style of play you want to go with. If you're going to play rugby wide channels against South Africa, then Tipperick is probably one of your first names on the team sheet. But I don't know. I've got no idea in that. It is tough. I mean, because we based it on a certain amount of numbers in each position.
Yeah.
And in the past, they've taken a bare five as back row.
Yeah, especially when you've got
multiple positions.
Especially when you've got Itoje and Byrne, who are second row / back rowers as well. It does make it that bit more difficult.
Yeah, which means someone like Billy is even more tenuous. Billy Vunipola, if we're talking about casualties.
Yeah, I just think that
that's yeah.
I mean, I think. I've been mulling this over a lot. And, you know, as I say, we didn't take Billy in our squad, did we? And I would probably stand by that. It's just whether Gatland is... I think there's so much strength in the back row that I think, you know, the inverted commas bolter of Sam Simmons is quite appealing to it. You know, and it sounds mad because he's European Player of the Year. But I do think he might get the nod over Billy. Just because of, you know... Like we said, the form, and it's a bit, you're banking on Billy getting back to the form of where he was.
It's hard pitches, it's fitness. Yeah. If you're playing at altitude, yeah. Would you rather Sam Simmons or Billy?
Sam Simmons, 100%.
So yeah. The other one for me, and I the more I think about it over time, the more I can't see him going at all is
Johnny. Don't say Sexton, you bastard, you've stolen mine.
I can skip and go to another one if you want.
Let's stay on that, but that will be my pick because I don't think I've got another one at the moment. But yeah, I'm with you on this. I just, the more I think about this one, Dan Bigger is the favourite to play 10. I would say kicking game, altitude, great under the high ball, proven test match performer, competitor, you know, everything we know, brilliant defence. And then if you're only taking two 10s plus Farrell, then why would you take Sexton who's you'd have to wrap in cotton wool? Now, again, if you're Ireland, you've done that for years, then that's one thing. But where you've got Finn Russell there to offer something completely different.
This is a huge call.
I think
Sexton.
I don't even think it's that call, that big a call. I think he had one good game against England. Otherwise, his international form has been pretty patchy, I think. And again, I'm a big, you know, he's had a magnificent career and he's been superb on two Lions tours, you know, integral parts of those winning sides. But again, Gatland's got no room for sentiment. And I just wonder whether...
If put this way, if Sexton was picked, and I was the next in line as outside half, I would have my bags packed because he regularly can't finish half an hour of a match regularly.
Yeah.
And on a Lions tour where, you know, you're playing against opposition for whom it's one of the biggest games of their career, you know, British Lions tour game, everyone's trying to knock seven bells out of everyone. Johnny's got that mentality where he won't back down. He's going to get dinged up, and that's one of the reasons why I wouldn't take him, and one of the reasons why if I was Finn Russell or whoever gets overlooked, I'd have my bags by the front door ready to get on a plane.
Yeah, and yeah, I agree with all of that. And South Africa is the dirtiest place to tour as well. I know it's not like being there in the '70s or even the '90s, but still, Christ, like a scrap.
Yeah, different now. We used to have like kind of completely partial referees back in the '90s and earlier. Now you get kind of neutrals from overseas and everything, so it's not so bad. But yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I wouldn't take Ellis, Genge. Because they're just aggro in his face and all the time and all that kind of thing. And everyone that I know I was chatting to yesterday would take him. And I wouldn't be disappointed if he went. I think he's brilliant, but temperament-wise, he was in everyone's face on the weekend in the Leicester Ulster game. So
they posted a little clip, didn't they, of him shaking hands in the dugout.
That's right. After the event.
He's in incredible shape at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah. Like I say, he's so explosive for a prop. I wouldn't, if he goes, it wouldn't be any surprise, and I wouldn't be disappointed. But I just think
Murph, you would have loved to have played with him, surely, in the first, in the second row, him in the front row. I mean,
I'd love to be in the same standard with him. Jesus. It's going back to casualties. I don't think if he went or if he didn't go, that wouldn't be a high profile casualty.
No, but I don't think it is.
If we're going to leave Jed with Sexto, I can easily move on to two more.
Just before you do, I just wanted to touch on Ellis Genge there, because I think the difference is, right, if it all kicks off in a tour game and Ellis Genge lamps someone in the face and he gets a red card and suspended, then okay, he was he might have been worth the risk taking him anyway. If you're only taking two tens and Sexton gets injured, you've then got to fly someone else over. I think it's way more disruptive, particularly if you're doing it. I know that Farrell's over there, but particularly if you're doing it in the week of a test. I don't know. I just don't. And let's say Finn Russell goes as second choice 10, or potentially with a shot of getting a test, and things don't work out. You've got safe options alongside it. If you try and build a side around Russell and you realise it's not quite going to pay off and you're not confident enough in him to do it, you slot Bigger or Farrell in there. Whereas with Sexton, you've got two safe options there already. If he'd have been in explosive 2013 form, it's a different story. He's inked in at 10, but I just
you don't think with Murray being the leading nine is going to be playing a lot of games?
No, I don't. Look, if you asked, if Andy Farrell had Dan Bigger to call upon, he would be starting for Ireland. Do you know what I mean? If Dan Bigger was Irish, he'd be playing for Ireland. I just think it comes down to the fact that they haven't had faith in any other option other than Sexton. Yeah. I don't see,
I do think that if he doesn't go, it wouldn't be a huge omission maybe from our side, but in Ireland it'd be massive.
Like, yeah, it would. Of course, it huge. Would. Yeah, but it would, and that's why I picked him as the one I think will be the casualty. But looking at the test side, even if you're going to say Murray's going to play 9, Henshaw's going to play 12 based on current form, then you'd have Sexton at 10. Are you really going to start picking an Irish back line when they've been stuttering at best during the Six Nations? I don't know. I wouldn't be clambering up to pick an Irish back line at the moment. I'd be picking I'd be picking Henshaw out of it because he's been outstanding. I'd be picking Murray because he put together a good game after, not being in and around the squad rather than starting 9. But I wouldn't be, I wouldn't be desperate to be picking players out of the Irish backline based on the Six Nations.
I think partly that they look at it slightly on individuals, but then also, link-ups as well. And, the Murray, the 9-10 combos, I think, out there is quite important. But I could well see him not making it, and especially with Townsend being in the coaching setup as well. Russell's probably got his silver boots polished.
They've had issues in the past, but I don't know if that would still be rumbling on now, because they've obviously put that to bed on a Scottish level. So
I believe that's all to bed, but I don't know. I think a lot can be read into picking Townsend at 10. I think he's been picked at 10 because he's the best available option as attack coach, really. I'm not sure it's all around building the side. I would not be surprised to see Dan Bigger starting at 10 in the Test match series, because I think he's the most proven performer at Test level out of the options we've got.
Well, I think he's favourite. I mean, even over the border in England, people like Ben Kay saying he's in poor position to be the Test 10. So, not on the same scale as Johnny, probably not, but in this country it will be a big deal. But Jonathan Davis I'd be amazed.
I would. And I'd be very surprised. Again, you'd be relying on finding old form, because there's not been anything significant this season, and he's been out injured a long time before that. I think it's a really big ask to get up to test match speed in, you know, in a matter of weeks.
Well, the Dragons game last week, he didn't look mobile at all by his own standards. And so how are you going to take him to the summer tour? You know, it's just, it's not really that much of a shock because he's had to move to 12 because he's not as mobile in 13 as he was and what have you for Wales. So, but it's still, you know, you wouldn't have.
I think
from the last World Cup, he's the best centre in the British Isles kind of thing. It would have been a shock, but because of the way he's come back from his injury, I think it might not even be that much of a shock anymore.
I think it might be a bigger shock outside of Wales than it is in Wales, actually. I think if you've watched him this season, he's not looked the same player. Whereas, you know, I think a lot of players, a lot of fans, if you just watch internationals, you wouldn't have noticed him at 12 and thought, oh, he doesn't look the same player. Whereas I think it's shown a bit more in club form. It doesn't feel that high profile. Obviously he is a high profile player, but I don't think it's that surprising perhaps if
not for people who follow it closely. You're right. Yeah. Anyone else got a casualty? I got one.
Go on. Keep coming, Murph.
Johnny May.
Yeah, I mean you've been peddling that one for quite a while, haven't you? I could see him missing out.
I just think there's some of the up and for Johnny May to go, some of the up and coming speed merchants are going to have to be omitted. Mm. So that would be either El Azed, Duan van der Merwe.
Yeah,
one of them is going to have to be overlooked. Who got proper young man's pace. Over a guy who's holding on to his pace into his 30s, which is what Johnny May is. And that's a big difference.
It is. I think we said before as well, you need out and out. You know, you need out and out gas in South Africa. It's a big, big advantage. I could see if Johnny May had played the last Test series, that might hold in his favour. The fact that he's got Lions experience.
Yeah, of course. Because Jack Noel last time around, and he's just come back to fitness as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. He has, and obviously offers you, again, I know we keep talking about versatility, but Noel can do a job, certainly in a midweek game at 15, even 13, if you need him to. But I could definitely see May missing out. I'm not saying it's going to be Noel who gets the nod there, but the more I think about it, and again, it doesn't help the fact that Gloucester have been, you know, have had a poor season. Because you're then kind of relying on you're relying on old form, and it is a position where there is lots of strength across the other nations, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice, like that, Murph. Let's wrap up by talking about European rugby. Heineken Cup semi-finals have delivered us an all French affair between Toulouse and La Rochelle. Which would be played at Twickenham. I don't know if that's irony or not, but we were saying this off air, it could be an amazing game of rugby because you've got two sides, you play really attractive stuff, or they could cancel each other out. You're not massively excited by this, are you?
I'm a big, well, if it was either of these sides playing a non-French team, I would be excited because obviously in the Toulouse team, you've got the best nine in the world. And Cheslin Kolbe, and you know, all sorts. And in this side, La Rochelle, you've got lots of great players, and they're playing probably the most attractive rugby up there anyway, most attractive rugby we've seen this season, European tournament. But I would rather they were just playing against non-French opposition. So one of those teams would be worthy of the final. And I didn't necessarily want Leinster to win yesterday, but I think it would have produced a bigger spectacle of a final whenever it is, end of May or something in Twickenham. Than it is now with an all-French affair. I mean, they were talking about allowing 10,000 people in or something?
I think so.
And so are they allowing 10,000 people to travel from France?
No, I don't think so. I think it'll be local. It'll be local support.
And I mean, in fairness, they wouldn't have allowed 10,000 people to travel from Leinster either, would they?
No.
So it was always going to be, you know, but it'd be much, much easier now to switch this to Paris.
Yeah, they should move it, shouldn't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the latest on sporting events in Paris is, but are you likely to get fans in Paris in May? I don't think you are. So, you know, you may as well have it in a I don't know. It feels like a decent way of. Will you sell 10,000 tickets for it? Yes. You know, it, it's a way. It's a way of testing the. Of testing the kind of the COVID regulations and keeping a keeping a close eye on what it does to infection rate and stuff like that. So, what about from a rugby perspective, Dan? You're a man who likes a bit of free flowing rugby. Is that the final you would want it to see? I was saying to Murph, like I get very little joy out of watching Leinster, as brilliant a side as they are. I'd rather see two sides like this who like to fling the ball around and play each other.
Yeah, I am excited. I think on paper, it's I totally get Murph's point about them potentially canceling each other out and knowing each other really well. But like on paper, it is exciting, isn't it? You look at that and think, wow, that's a really interesting prospect. Ticket wise, I'd love to go with those two squads, and all the top players. And yeah, you just hope that it lives up to what it is on paper, really. Murph said off air, didn't he, about La Rochelle, just how well they've done in a relatively short period of time with bringing together that squad and the coaching setup, which I think is a really great point, really. And Ronan O'Gara is getting a lot of praise, isn't he? And from a lot of ex players as well. And he was always a guy that I think was quite difficult to potentially play with, or maybe certainly play against. But coaching wise, he's done a great job. And I love the way he talks as well with the pundits.
Yeah,
it's just like he's in the bar having a chat. No, like big words, and just sort of classic coach talk. It's like it all makes sense.
I think he enjoyed his time in the bar when he was a player. He was quite keen of a night out. But yeah, mate, his reputation is sky high right now, isn't it? He's doing getting massive plaudits, and I suppose someone who is a one of the most high profile Irish players in history, he'll have his eye on a gig in some capacity in the Irish side at some point.
Oh yeah, he definitely. Yeah, he definitely will. And if he keeps going like this, it's he's definitely a coach to watch. I just think it was just so refreshing just hearing him, chat, and you can see how, it seems to be a really, really happy camp, doesn't it? But it can change so quickly there, can't it? It's difficult over in France. So, it's good at the moment. But
he's very relaxed on camera, and I think that comes from having been there and done it as a player, you know what I mean. But at the same time, we haven't seen him when they're not playing well.
Yeah.
he's probably a misery guts when they're not going well. But then, you wouldn't be interviewing him after a semi-final, would you? Because if you go to a semi-final or deep into the European Cup, you obviously play quite well. So, it'd be interesting to see, because he was known for being quite fiery as a player, but obviously he met with age and everything. But it'd be interesting to see him when things are not going so well. But by then he might be, as you say, coaching one of the provinces or something.
Yeah, quite possibly. But yeah, it's interesting one. We'll keep our eye on that with the final just around the corner. A bit of transfer news to finish. So a couple of signings down at the Ospreys. So Michael Collins is set to sign. If you remember, had a stint at the Scarlets going back five years or so, I guess. And he is heading over to join from Highlanders, which, I mean, that feels like a really good signing to me. Versatile. I believe he's Welsh qualified as well. So it's a good bit of business there, I would say, that one.
Yeah, depending on how much they're paying. He's this type of player a few years ago you would have thought might have cost a lot of money, but I'm not so sure now.
Yeah.
I don't know how much he's costing him. There was another transfer, wasn't there?
Was another transfer. That's the one. Same side. And it is the Irish lock, Jack Regan, who has been playing down in New Zealand as well. So again, someone's obviously done a decent scouting job down there by the look of it. But yeah, Irish second row forwards, like we were saying, or like you often say, Murph, you can never have enough meat in that department, and obviously bolstering some more reinforcements in the row.
Definitely. He's obviously not Welsh qualified though.
No, he's
not. He could be.
I suppose if he sticks around long enough.
I think he is. That's what they do a lot of the time is just try and identify someone tidy who's also Welsh qualified because it doesn't come against their quota for the team and all of this stuff. One of the things that Finlay, or Scarlett, should I say, built their success on a few seasons ago when they were going well, was finding decent overseas signings like Tadhg Byrne and Johnny McNichol and Johnny Barkley and, you know, people like that. And that's what all the Welsh regions need to do because they're doing everything on a shoestring. So
they have to
find bargains, and hopefully these two are bargains.
Yeah, they do. And obviously I suppose it's slightly different. I'd be interested. It would be interesting to know how much the Ospreys are paying for Collins, because he's obviously a quality player, and there is a bit more private cash floating around down the Ospreys now. But yeah, whether or not that's, you know, they've loosened the purse strings for this, or it is a bargain, but certainly a quality player and one to watch. Right, we'll just finish with this review, which has been sent in to us and put on iTunes by Longdog78. And I'm particularly warm to this because of the subject line, which says, "Brandies and cream eggs all around. Superb listen and still, in my humble opinion, the best rugby podcast. Makes me miss sitting in my local club chatting endlessly about rugby over a pint. Keep up the good work, boys. Dio." I think we all miss sitting in a local club chatting over a pint, and hopefully we'll be able to do that at some point soon. But if you want to leave us a review, if you enjoy the show, then please do that on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. A final thanks, as always, to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some great quality coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. And they now do an instant coffee as well, which is really good stuff. So, if you haven't got time to make some coffee in the percolator, there's always the instant stuff there as well. Right, final thanks then, as always, to my co-hosts, to Dan and to Murph. Thanks, fellas. We may or may not be back on Friday morning after the Lions reaction. We'll see how things go. But we might bring you a bonus one later in the week. So make sure you hit the subscribe button so that you'll get alerted when we release new podcasts. But that's it for this week. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back to chat rugby with you one way or the other very, very soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.